Chapter 51. Midnight Quarrel at Trantridge. They showed no recognition of her, and possibly had none, for they had been under the influence of liquor on that occasion, and were only temporary sojourners there as here. They did all kinds of men's work of preference, including well sinking, hedging, ditching, and excavating, without any sense of fatigue. Noted reed drawers were they too, and looked round upon the other three with some superciliousness. Putting on their gloves all set, to work in a row in front of the press, an erection formed of two posts connected by a crossbeam, under which the sheaves, to be drawn from, were laid ears outward, the beam being pegged down by pins in the uprights, and lowered as the sheaves diminished. The day hardened in color, the light coming in at the barn doors upwards from the snow instead of downwards from the sky. The girls pulled handful after handful from the press, but by reason of the presence of the strange women, who were recounting scandals, Marion and Iz could not at first talk of old times as they wished to do. Presently they heard the muffled tread of a horse, and the farmer rode up to the barn door. When he had dismounted, he came close to Tess, and remained looking musingly at the side of her face. As he had not turned at first, but his fixed attitude led her to look round, when she perceived that her employer was the native of Trantridge from whom as he had taken flight on the high road, because of his allusion to her history. He waited till as he had carried the drawn bundles to the pile outside, when he said, "So you be the young woman who took my civility in such ill part? Be drowned if I didn't think you might be as soon as I heard of your being hired. Well, you thought you had got the better of me the first time at the inn with your fancy man, and the second time on the road, when you bolted. But now I think I've got the better you," he concluded with a hard laugh. Tess, between the Amazons and the farmer like a bird caught in a clap net, returned no answer, continuing to pull the straw. She could read character sufficiently well to know by this time that as he had nothing to fear from her employer's gallantry, it was rather the tyranny induced by his mortification at Claire's treatment of him. Upon the whole, she preferred that sentiment in man, and felt brave enough to endure it. "You thought I was in love with E, I suppose? Some women are such fools, to take every look as serious earnest. But there's nothing like a winter afield for taking that nonsense out o' young wenches' heads, and you've signed and agreed till Lady Day. Now, are you going to beg my pardon? I think you ought to beg mine." "Very well, as you like. But we'll see which is master here. Be they all the sheaves you've done today?"
"Yes, sir."
"'Tis a very poor show. Just see what they've done over there," pointing to the two stalwart women. "The rest too have done better than you. They've all practiced it before, and I have not. And I thought it made no difference to you, as it is task work, and we are only paid for what we do."
"Oh, but it does. I want the barn cleared. I am going to work all the afternoon instead of leaving at 2 as the others will do."
He looked sullenly at her and went away. Tess felt that she could not have come to a much worse place, but anything was better than gallantry. When 2 o'clock arrived, the professional reed drawers tossed off the last half pint in their flagon, put down their hooks, tied their last sheaves, and went away. Marion and Iz would have done likewise, but on hearing that Tess meant to stay, to make up by longer hours for her lack of skill, they would not leave her. Looking out at the snow, which still fell, Marion exclaimed, "Now, we've got it all to ourselves." And so at last the conversation turned to their old experiences at the dairy, and, of course, the incidents of their affection for Angel Clare. "Iz and Marion," said Mrs. Angel Clare, with a dignity which was extremely touching, "seeing how very little of a wife she was, I can't join in talk with you now, as I used to do, about Mr. Clare. You will see that I cannot, because, although he is gone away from me for the present, he is my husband." Iz was by nature the sauciest and most caustic of all the four girls who had loved Clare. "He was a very splendid lover, no doubt," she said. "But I don't think he is a too fond husband to go away from you so soon.
He had to go. He was obliged to go to see about the land over there, pleaded Tess. He might have tided it over the winter. Ah, that's owing to an accident, a misunderstanding, and we won't argue it, Tess answered, with tearfulness in her words. Perhaps there's a good deal to be said for him. He did not go away, like some husbands, without telling me, and I can always find out where he is. After this they continued for some long time in a reverie, as they went on seizing the ears of corn, drawing out the straw, gathering it under their arms, and cutting off the ears with their bill hooks, nothing sounding in the barn, but the swish of the straw, and the crunch of the hook. Then Tess suddenly flagged, and sank down upon the heap of wheat ears at her feet. I knew you wouldn't be able to stand it, cried Marion. He wants harder flesh than yours for this work. Just then the farmer entered. H, that's how you get on when I am away, he said to her. But it is my own loss, she pleaded. Ah, yours. I want it finished, he said doggedly, as he crossed the barn and went out at the other door. Don't ye mind him, there's a dear, said Marion. I've worked here before. Now you go, and lie down there, and Iz and I will make up your number. I don't like to let you do that. I'm taller than you too. However, she was so overcome that she consented to lie down a while, and reclined on a heap of pole tails the refuse after the straight straw had been drawn thrown up at the further side of the barn. Her succumbing had been as largely owing to agitation at the reopening the subject of her separation from her husband, as to the hard work. She lay in a state of percipience without volition, and the rustle of the straw, and the cutting of the ears by the others, had the weight of bodily touches. She could hear from her corner, in addition to these noises, the murmur of their voices. She felt certain that they were continuing the subject already broached, but their voices were so low that she could not catch the words. At last Tess grew more and more anxious to know what they were saying, and, persuading herself that she felt better, she got up and resumed work. Then Iz Hewitt broke down. As he had walked more than a dozen miles the previous evening, had gone to bed at midnight, and had risen again at 5 o'clock. Marion alone, thanks to her bottle of liquor and her stoutness of build, stood the strain upon back and arms without suffering. Tess urged Iz to leave off, agreeing, as she felt better, to finish the day without her, and make equal division of the number of sheaves. Iz accepted the offer gratefully, and disappeared through the great door into the snowy track to her lodging. Marion, as was the case every afternoon at this time on account of the bottle, began to feel in a romantic vein. I should not have thought it of him never, she said in a dreamy tone. And I loved him so. I didn't mind his having you. But this about Iz is too bad. Tess, in her start at the words, narrowly missed cutting off a finger with the bill hook. Is it about my husband? She stammered. Well, yes. Iz said, don't ye tell her, but I am sure I can't help it. It was what he wanted Iz to do. He wanted her to go off to Brazil with him. Tess's face faded as white as the scene without, and its curves straightened. And did Iz refuse to go, she asked. I don't know. Anyhow he changed his mind. Pooh, then he didn't mean it. T'was just a man's jest. Yes he did. For he drove her a good ways towards the station. He didn't take her. They pulled on in silence till Tess, without any premonitory symptoms, burst out crying. There, said Marion. Oh, I wish I hadn't told thee. No, it is a very good thing that you have done. I have been living on in a third of her, lackaday way, and have not seen what it may lead to. I ought to have sent him a letter oftener. He said I could not go to him, but he didn't say I was not to write as often as I liked. I won't dally like this any longer. I have been very wrong and neglectful in leaving everything to be done by him. The dim light in the barn grew dimmer, and they could see to work no longer. When Tess had reached home that evening and had entered into the privacy of her little whitewashed chamber, she began impetuously writing a letter to Claire. But falling into doubt she could not finish it. Afterwards she took the ring from the ribbon on which she wore it next her heart, and retained it on her finger all night, as if to fortify herself in the sensation that she was really the wife of this elusive lover of hers, who could propose that it should go with him abroad, so shortly after he had left her. Knowing that, how could she write entreaties to him, or show that she cared for him anymore? XLIV, by the disclosure in the barn her thoughts were led anew in the direction which they had taken more than once of late to the distant Emminster vicarage. It was through her husband's parents that S. he had been charged to send a letter to Claire if she desired, and to write to them direct if in difficulty. But that sense of her having morally no claim upon him had always led Tess to suspend her impulse to send these notes, and to the family at the vicarage, therefore, as to her own parents since her marriage, she was virtually non-existent. This self-effacement in both directions had been quite in consonance with her independent character of desiring nothing by way of favor or pity to which she was not entitled on a fair consideration of her deserts. As he had set herself to stand or fall by her qualities, and to waive such merely technical claims upon a strange family as had been established for her by the flimsy fact of a member of that family, in a season of impulse, writing his name in a church book beside hers. But now that she was stung to a fever by Iz's tale, there was a limit to her powers of renunciation. Why had her husband not written to her? He had distinctly implied that he would at least let her know of the locality to which he had journeyed, but he had not sent a line to notify his address. Was he really indifferent? But was he ill? Was it for her to make some advance? Surely she might summon the courage of solicitude, call at the vicarage for intelligence, and express her grief at his silence. If Angel's father were the good man as he had heard him represented to be, he would be able to enter into her heart-starved situation. Her social hardships she could conceal. To leave the farm on a weekday was not in her power. Sunday was the only possible opportunity. Flintcomb Ash being in the middle of the Cretaceous tableland over which no railway had climbed as yet, it would be necessary to walk. And the distance being 15 miles each way, she would have to allow herself a long day for the undertaking by rising early. A fortnight later, when the snow had gone, and had been followed by a hard black frost, she took advantage of the state of the roads to try the experiment. At 4 o'clock that Sunday morning she came downstairs, and stepped out into the starlight. The weather was still favorable, the ground ringing under her feet like an anvil. Marion and Iz were much interested in her excursion, knowing that the journey concerned her husband. Their lodgings were in a cottage a little further along the lane, but they came and assisted Tess in her departure, and argued that she should dress up in her very prettiest guise, to captivate the hearts of her parents-in-law, though she, knowing of the austere and Calvinistic tenets of old Mr. Clare, was indifferent, and even doubtful. A year had now elapsed since her sad marriage, but as he had preserved sufficient draperies from the wreck of her then full wardrobe, to clothe her very charmingly as a simple country girl. Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.